Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
I'm Emma. And we've both been trying for a baby for a lot of time.
A lot.
And and neither of us is currently pregnant.
Welcome to episode 7.
Now we are 7.
We're 7. This is great. Yeah. It's so exciting.
Yeah, we've done good. We've done good, kid.
And we're recording this a little bit last minute because I've been on holiday, haven't I?
Yeah, you
sorry, mate.
Bastard.
I know.
You guys are going to hear about that next week.
Yeah, yeah.
Suffice it to say.
Reveal all later.
She's so tan.
Oh, thanks, man.
She's highlighting it with a nice kind of salmon pink jumper that really brings out the colour.
trying to colour match my tan.
I'm here in wearing black because that's how I feel right now because it's just dark.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. It'll only take me a few days to get back to that. Don't worry.
So we'll be quick today. Gabby, you've been speaking to a couple of people.
I have. I interviewed the wonderful Gordon Mullins, who is the founder of the Mindful IVF app, which some of you might be aware of.
I'm aware of because I use it.
It's brilliant. I found it one day and I looked into it and I was like, where did this come from? It's such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out he's from Cork. He works in a place called AccuLife, which is a kind of a natural fertility clinic. He's an acupuncturist by trade.
Cool.
And so we had a chat all about the crossover between mindfulness and acupuncture and fertility. And he's a really, really lovely guy. And it was a great chat. So we'll be having that in a moment.
Awesome.
And I also spoke to Professor Tim Child, as usual, medical director at Oxford Fertility, and we spoke about when to test once you've had an embryo transfer.
Ooh.
Interesting.
And I, a couple of weeks ago, went to the launch of Fertility Network's Scream for IVF campaign. Really cool experience, actually. If you guys get a chance to be in a room full of people who are going through the same thing, just do it, because it just felt so normal.
Mm.
It just felt really cool. Like, everybody was just like, so where are you in your cycle, or what are you up to at the moment? And somebody was like, I've just got to go and inject myself in the arse. And we were like, yeah, cool, yeah.
Sweet, man, sweet.
Yeah,
I couldn't go because I was having a bit of a work meltdown because it was like pre-holiday.
Yeah.
Which I was really gutted about.
But obviously it would have been funner if you were there. Mm. But it was quite fun. So in the intervening period, they have racked up tens of thousands of signatures on their petition to get a debate in Parliament to get 3 fully funded cycles of IVF for everyone.
Amazing.
So I spoke to Anya Sizer, who you've previously heard from on this podcast, about how the campaign was going.
Great. Brilliant.
Here she is. So you guys have done the hashtag Scream for IVF campaign, or just Scream for IVF campaign. Can you just tell us a little bit about what that is?
So it came from a previous campaign that we did last year, which was the Right to Try. And the Right to Try was a concept that one day a year we'd really, really push the fact that there is unfair provision of IVF for people across the UK. So there's these huge regional variations, and it's often called a postcode lottery. So we created the Right to Try, which was a day where we got people tweeting and talking about it, and we did a big campaign. And then we were very lucky, and Saatchi Wellness contacted us. I'd been in touch with them for the last few years, And they basically said they'd love to do some free work for us and support us in making the best campaign that we could out of the Right to Try, which was incredible. And so we spent a year thinking through, coming up with ideas, getting everything in place until we could launch last week Screen for IVF, which calling for full implementation of the NICE guidelines across the UK. So that's what it is.
Okay, and the NICE guidelines are three fully funded rounds.
Absolutely. Three full cycles. That's any fresh, any frozen cycles for each couple that is eligible. And that's been the gold standard with NICE. So it's the one that they feel is going to be the most economically sound and the most medically sound in terms of outcome. Three full cycles is the one that's most likely to achieve a pregnancy for a couple.
And so how is the campaign going, first of all?
Really well, really well. We're so proud of the look and the feel of it and the drive behind it. We had a great launch evening where you were at.
We did.
And we were so, so pleased to have you there. And it was really good. And then it's just taken off. So we're less than a week in and we are at 62,000 signatures.
Wow. And how many do you need?
100,000 ideally we need, but okay. You've got till sort of November to get that. Be nice to have it a bit before then, but we've got a good amount of time now to get the last remaining 38,000. So we're just going to keep pushing, and once you hit 100,000, it is almost certain that you'll be able to have a full debate in Parliament. So that's the idea. We want to call for a full parliamentary debate to say, why on earth is there this regional variation on what is a medical issue?
Of course. Okay, and so people have got until November then to get involved, and how can they do that?
Please get involved. Please, you can put your own scream up, so you can take a picture or selfie of you doing a scream, and then go and sign the petition. You can get a group screaming, team scream. You can retweet every single day, tell everyone you ever meet to go and sign the petition. Just get involved however you can, but we really need to push for the signatures. And then the second way is to come along to the rally, which is next month on the 10th of October, 5 till 7 o'clock at Richmond Terrace outside Parliament. And we will be playing all the screams. So we're going to go for the world's longest IVF scream, and we will be making as loud a noise as we can and yelling at Parliament to make the change. So those are the two ways. Please get retweeting and signing the petition, and then come to the rally.
Fabulous. Okay, well, thank you so much, Anya. And I'm sure that everybody who listens will get well involved.
Brilliant. I really would love that. This is everyone's campaign. It's not just ours. So here's hoping for change.
So guys, get involved if you can. It's really easy to find. Just go on Fertility Network's website. I think it's screamforivf.org is the best place to go to get involved. Sign the petition, post your screaming selfie. Have you done yours, Gabs?
I have. Of course I have.
And yeah, and then also while you're at it and you're on the internet, you should follow us on Instagram.
Yes, at Big Fat Negative.
And Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
And email us
bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com,
and you can find us on Facebook,
Big Fat Negative.
Yes, mate, you did it.
Oh wow, gosh, that was like a test.
Yeah. And other than that, guys, enjoy the show.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh God, I feel guilty. Well, I mean, it hasn't been that good. God,
good.
Don't get me wrong. Can you know why? Bloody fell for it again, Emma.
God.
I know. I thought I was pregnant again. I'm so
mate.
Oh, the rats.
What do we call it? The zone of.
The hope zone.
The hope zone.
Yeah. I got well entrenched in that.
Oh,
and yeah, there was a day last week where I thought that I had a metallic taste in my mouth. Thought I felt a bit sick. I was like, oh yeah, we're in, we're off. And I probably just hadn't brushed my teeth properly that morning. And it's a real slippery slope when you let yourself go, because you start Googling.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll just look up some baby carriers. I'm sure I would get some stylish ones. I wonder how much they are. And then...
Moki.
Oh, yeah, good. Don't tell me things like that. And then all of a sudden, you're looking up the due date, which actually I didn't get to that point time, thankfully.
Don't ever get there.
Thankfully. So I did. I kind of fully unbelieved it. And then the following day, got the old familiar cramps and was like, oh, okay, well, that's that then. And I was supposed to go out that evening and I really didn't feel like going out.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like pretending to be fun. Do you know when you just haven't got any energy and you just want to mope?
Yeah, I do know that.
But I forced myself to go out and actually had a really nice time.
Ah.
And then the next day, me and my husband went down to Brighton to see some friends, and I got absolutely shiitake mushroomed. I had a really good time.
That's important.
It is. Well, it's the classic boom and bust of TTC, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You're so pious for 2 weeks, and then when it goes wrong, you lose it.
I'm not drinking, and I'm only eating watercress.
Exactly.
And then
my body is a temple.
Yeah, and then you're just like, shot.
Wine, more wine. It was a classic. I did regret it a little bit the next day, but I think it was needed.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's an important stage of the infertility grief cycle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to have the old ups and downs. one thing that's quite interesting actually is on the Thursday when I thought I was pregnant, I started to think about how I was going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously we're both doing a podcast now.
And
I was like, when I was daydreaming, I was like, how am I going to tell Emma?
With a t-shirt?
Yeah.
What if you just unzipped a hoodie?
Oh my lord, can you imagine? But I, to be honest, and I haven't talked to you about this yet, I came up with a solution and I'm not sure if it's a bit controversial.
Tell me.
So because you were, I worked out that you were probably going to be in your 2 week wait.
Oh yeah.
When I was going to find out.
Of course.
Potentially that I was preggers.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that might really upset her. And I
could alter the stress levels.
Exactly. I was like, the last thing I want to do during her 2 week wait is make her stressed and upset her. So I was going to lie, Emma.
You bastard.
That was my plan. I was going to not tell you if I didn't see you.
Okay.
Obviously, I wasn't going to call you up and lie to you.
We are seeing each other weekly now.
But we do see each other weekly, so I wasn't really going to get away with that. And I did come to the conclusion that I might lie to you. And that is terrible. But I don't know. Come on, give me a reaction.
I've recently found out that I've got two very close friends. You heard from Sophie last week or a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
You heard from Sophie a couple of weeks ago. She, as we discussed, was very direct. She phoned me and was like, this is the call. And I was like, okay, congratulations. And then I hung up. And she, we texted and then I found out that my other very, very close friend is pregnant.
Yes.
Between them, by next March, they will have 6 children.
Mm.
I feel like maybe there wasn't enough babies to go around and that's why I don't get any. But anyway, I think she was just giving me my space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's a different approach.
Yeah.
Some people choose the apologising for having a functional uterus route.
Well, I'll never be doing that, I don't think.
I'm so sorry, but I'm pregnant. Which is great. Like, if that's what you want to do, then yeah, I'm sorry too, pal. But I'm not going to say that.
I, you know, if you weren't in your 2 week wait when it happened, I would obviously tell you. I would tell you straight away.
Thanks, mate.
But I think I was just, because it was that delicate stage, and I was like, the last thing I would want to do is be part of a reason that why you'd be upset during that very important time. So that's why I came to.
I think that probably would have been the right thing to do.
Oh, thank God.
Right. You know me so well.
The friendship will continue.
No, I do. Because that at that time, you kind of basically only want to think about yourself.
Mm.
And you're right. It probably would like make me feel weird.
Mm.
So thank you. Thank you for thinking about lying to me.
Hey, but it didn't matter, did it?
No. No, this is not a concern you're going to have Gabs.
No, no. It only mattered for the 8 hours that I thought I was
pregnant. Well, yeah. There's that. And there's also the fact that I ain't going to have a 2 week wait.
Oh, no.
Because they've cancelled my round again. So this is the second try of my second embryo transfer. Had... So 2 weeks ago on the Tuesday, one week ago on Tuesday, I woke up, had a bit of bleeding, freaked out, went to the hospital, got a scan. She said, oh, look, you've got a cyst on your ovary. That's probably what's causing the bleeding. Not to worry, we'll give you estrogen patches.
Right.
And you can go on those and hopefully it'll stop and it'll be fine. This Tuesday, I woke up, had a bleed.
Another one.
But this time it was fresh.
Okay.
And so I just, like, literally went into panic mode, threw my phone across the room, like, lobbed it really hard.
Oh.
My husband was like, what are you doing? Went for an emergency scan again. The nurse was like, actually, that thing I thought was a cyst is actually your hydrocele pinks, but it's okay because we cut off the tube a few months ago, so okay. Not to worry. But... here's a new thing. Your lining looks absolutely crap.
So it wasn't the cyst at all, because there is no cyst.
No, but then she saw an endometrioma as well, which I've never had. I've never had a cyst. I've never had an endometrioma. I've never had a crap lining. So I don't know what is going on. Like, essentially, she suggested that sometimes our bodies don't react that well to the hormones, which is what I've been trying to tell them.
Yeah.
So she was basically like, yeah, look, there's no point carrying on with this. It's
so annoying.
It's just so frustrating. Like, I've got 4 embryos. They're sitting in a fridge.
Get them in me.
I want them all in me at once. I'm just going to smash them all in me like a child eating too much chocolate. I'm so over it. Like, I just, the ups and downs are so exhausting. My mum was there with me and she just, like, she looked at me like, I do not know what to say.
Yeah.
Like, she just gave me a massive hug.
Well, yeah, that's
all I
good.
Needed. But I just, so we're going to try again next month. We're going to go for a kind of natural cycle.
Okay. So that's not going back on the pill.
No.
Just going straight into your natural cycle, as you say.
And then if we do a scan on day 10 and it's looking a bit ropey, they're going to give me some drugs again. Although this time, before I was sniffing Bucerolin, this time I'm going to be injecting Bucerolin.
Ooh.
Hello, needles, my old friend.
Hello, needles, my old friend.
Mm. So... that's the situation.
Right. And how much do you know about your embryos?
Well, so I've asked a lot. Like, what kind of quality are they?
Yeah, like, how do you choose which ones? Because in other...
America.
In America, they seem to know
the
gender of their embryos, and they can kind of choose, oh, I quite fancy a girl or a boy. And I'm assuming they don't do that here.
No. Well, not on the NHS, anyway.
No, of course. I'm sure they do elsewhere.
Like, here's your embryos. You get what you're given.
Yeah.
No. Because I'm doing PGD, I think they only use the highest quality embryos.
Oh, so you must know quite a lot about yours if you're doing that.
I don't know that much. Because I've said to them a few times, like, what kind of quality are we looking at? And they just say, we only use the highest quality embryos. So I take it that means all my embryos are really, really, really great.
Great.
But, I mean, how can you really ever know? Like,
No, I don't know. And there's some question about whether testing them is worthwhile, whether it works out better.
So with PGD, I think it was about whether it does it get women pregnant. Are you talking about the test that was the study? So I read that because I was interested in that, because obviously we're doing PGD. Mm. We had like 11 embryos at the beginning, I think. And basically it was about whether the woman gets pregnant with those PGD. Is the woman more likely to get pregnant with those embryos? But I was a bit confused because PGD isn't to get you pregnant. It's to test for genetic problems. Mm. So the reason we're doing PGD is because my husband has a translocation, Robertsonian translocation.
Mm.
His genes are mismatched, basically.
Oh. But he's fine.
He's a bit weird, I don't know.
He's a bit weird, but I don't think it's got anything to do with his genes. You're not weird, John, by the way. I'm joking.
If things go one way, our babies will be fine. If they go a different way, they could end up with... There's basically a really high risk of Down syndrome and also a high risk of miscarriage.
Right,
if they carry this genetic problem.
Okay, yeah.
So that's what they're testing for. They're not, like, testing them and then... That's why I didn't really understand the study.
I guess the assumption is that if you're testing them to a kind of higher degree, the chances are that the ones that get transferred are going to be have a better chance of implanting.
I mean, the thing is that in PGD, they only test for the one thing that you're asking them to test for. They don't test for everything. They're not like, well, our PGD guys don't anyway. They just test. They're like, we test to see... They don't even test to see if they're carriers of this translocation. They test to see if they have, like, the bad bit of the translocation that would make them an unviable embryo or that would give them Down syndrome. So I don't I didn't really understand that study.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my week. It was shit again.
Oh, buddy.
I know.
It's going to get better. It is.
Maybe.
It is.
Well,
you're going to be working out how you're going to tell me you're pregnant.
I'm just going to be like, mate, I'm pregnant.
Well, you're not going to be able to get away with that one, I don't
think. What I'm going to do is... I'm going to have a parade. They're going to close off Trafalgar Square.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm going to have acrobats and elephants.
Oh.
Yeah.
And flamingos. Did you know that they're becoming a bit of a symbol of infertility as well?
Are we, as a community, just taking... quite cool things.
I think we are. We're taking all the hipstery emojis and turning them into symbols.
I don't know where this flamingo thing has come from.
I actually asked Alice Rose, who was last week's guest. Did you? She wasn't too clear either, but then we both kind of decided that maybe it's because we're saying that it's a kind of a jazzier entry to life because we're doing IVF, so therefore it's a jazzier thing like than that. A stork.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
What other kind of cool tropes are there around? Oh, palm leaves. There's got to be something for palm leaves, right?
Because
then I've got loads of clothes that have like a palm leaf. Oh, leopard print.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Leopard print. If we could make that a thing.
Well, because we're IVF warriors.
Oh, yes.
Warriors might wear leopard print.
Yeah.
Let's do that one.
Yeah, okay. Guys, anybody I see in leopard print clothing, I'm going to be like, you know.
We all know. I hear you, sister.
But anyway, I've got to say I'm not holding out that much hope for next month because my body just does not like drugs and it takes a while to kind of flush them out.
Okay, so you think that even though you're going to do unmedicated, it might be
crap
still in your system?
I mean, I'll keep you all updated.
Oh, damn straight you will.
But I just, let's not all like... cross our fingers because I maybe in a few months, but I don't think next month will be the month.
Well, I'm crossing mine.
Thanks, mate.
Hey, maybe we'll end up doing it at the same time.
Maybe we'll be able to announce to each other that we're pregnant
at the same time.
At the same time.
Oh, my auntie who lives in Cyprus rang me up and she was like, I've listened to the podcast and I've had a premonition.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was like, you and Emma are going to get pregnant at the same time.
Yes.
I don't know.
Awesome. Can we give them like funny twinny names?
Yeah.
Like Tia and Tamara.
Tia and Tamara. Yeah.
Yeah. Bert and Ernie. Oh my God.
Bert and Ernie.
Can we please have Bert and Ernie?
Okay, let's do that.
Even if they're girls.
Even if they're girls. I think even more so if they're girls.
Yeah,
they're great girls' names.
Great. Well, that's sorted.
Well, done.
Yeah, sweet. Now to get pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Just that small thing that we haven't managed to do yet at all. You have obviously recently launched the Mindful IVF app, but you have a history of acupuncture. So I guess it'd be great if you could start by telling us a little bit about your background.
So we run a natural fertility clinic here in Ireland, and we are here to basically help couples that are having difficulties conceiving. Normally, couples will come to us, maybe they've been on the journey for 2 to 5 years, and we also support couples that are going through the IVF process also. Initially, when I started this, was about 15 years ago in the acupuncture, and I trained initially in general acupuncture, and then went to the US and specialized in fertility acupuncture for about 4 years. I worked with a company that would do retreats on a monthly basis, so couples would spend 5 to 7 days with us, and we would have a nutritionist on site, we'd have a medical doctor on site, we'd have an acupuncturist on site, and then over the 5 days we'd build a plan together to help them on the next phase of their journey. Now sometimes people were after multiple failed IVFs, multiple failed cycles. And, you know, they had spent, you know, a lot of time, a lot of energy, emotions, and financially as well, it was a huge thing for them. So it was great because it was a huge synergy of people that were coming from multiple areas between counseling, acupuncture, nutrition, and the medical side. So they got a really good plan at the end of it. Then I got the opportunity to study in New York for a year in Chinatown in one of the teaching schools there. So my teacher at the time was an 88 generation Taoist monk. So it was father to son, father to son, father to son. And it's just this beautiful amount of information that passed on from the generations. And that really helped to give me a massive understanding of the body. Then I came back to Ireland and I met...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
My wife, and I suppose it was made much more sense to practice out of Ireland. And I think in the last maybe 15 years, we've probably helped about 3,000 couples. Now, when I say help, we didn't get them pregnant, but in relation to whether somebody was trying naturally or with assisted conception, we would have been part of the program to help them, whether it be through acupuncture, meditation, and sometimes we would do some hypnosis as well and neurolinguistics, because a lot of patients would come in not only with physical issues, but there'd be a lot of emotional stuff going on as well. So our goal really was to help them to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm. And so do you mind going into a little bit of detail into just how acupuncture works? Because I think it's something that a lot of people talk about, and I doubt that a lot of people know how it works. So if you could explain that, that'd be great.
Yeah, so there's different types of acupuncture. A lot of people assume that it's just one type. Now, in I suppose Europe and America, we study mainly a thing called traditional Chinese medicine. There's also five element acupuncture. There's Japanese acupuncture, Korean acupuncture, and there's loads more. There's classical Chinese medicine, and I think we're used to seeing, you know, somebody comes in and they're going to stick some needles into you and they're going to leave the room and you're just suddenly going to get pregnant. It doesn't work that way. I'd have queues out the door if that was what was going on. But I think for me, with the whole acupuncture side of things, it's just a different way of looking at the body. A couple of hundred years ago, 300 or 400 years ago, you know, your local doctor would have been the butcher, and they would have understood anatomy. They would have understood the body and the muscles and the hearts and the lungs. And, you know, they'd take the heart out and they'd say, oh, what's the function of this? So it was very much about each organ having a function. In Asia, they were doing the exact same thing. They were taking the organs out and they were like, here's the heart, here's the lungs, here's the liver. And what's the energy? What's the energy attached to this? So they might look at heart energy. They might look at lung energy. All energy is that when patients come into us, if they're exhausted, tired and fatigued, they have low energy. And some people come in and they're always on the go. They never take time out for themselves. And they just seem to have this constant energy, energy, energy. And then they fall flat on the floor at nighttime. So that's high energy. And all we're trying to do is get a balance between the two. And what's interesting is that the body has two main systems. It has a primary system, which is the heart, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys. And it has a secondary system, which is the gallbladder, the spleen, and the reproductive system. Now, if I can take out your gallbladder, I can take out your spleen, I can take out your ovaries, and I can take out your uterus, and you will live. If I take out your heart, if I take out your lungs, it's not a good thing. So the body has this amazing system to ensure that all the resources, well, 80% of resources go to the primary system of the heart, the lungs, the liver, and the kidneys, so that your body is functioning. And then the 20% goes to the secondary system. Now, if someone comes into me really tired and exhausted and fatigued and is at 70%, there is no energy getting to the reproductive system in acupuncture. So that's how we look at things. We look at, you know, how much energy is getting to our patients.
Right, right. And so say if I came to you and, you know, told you about my infertility journey, where do you start? What's the significance in where you put the needles?
So there is about 400 points in the body. And we, you know, between about 400 points in the body. Out of that, there's about 40 points that are really amazing at helping the reproductive system. So those are broken into energy points and blood points. You know, there's different definitions of how acupuncture works. I think the easiest for me when I'm explaining to doctors or medical people is not to talk about chi, not to talk about meridians, not to talk about energy, because it's not on their radar, it's not in their training. So for me, when I explain how acupuncture works, it's very similar if that, let's say you're out going for a run and you fall over and you cut your knee and you cut your elbow and suddenly you start to bleed. Like, you're not going to bleed out there and then. Immediately what happens is that there's an increased blood supply to the trauma area. Your immune system kicks in immediately to deal with any infection. And then your brain releases serotonin and endorphins to ensure the body doesn't go into shock. So that's what happens when the body experiences a trauma. For us, when we put needles in, we're creating what we call micro traumas, little mini injuries within the body. So immediately what happens is that there's an increase of blood supply to those areas. The immune system kicks in immediately. And then the brain will release serotonin and endorphins. The brain doesn't go, oh, it's only Gordon, it's fine, he's only doing acupuncture, we don't need to release any endorphins. It's the body's natural healing mechanism. So over time of maybe 2,000 years, the Asian medicine started to realize that there were certain parts of our body that were really good at helping different areas. And like, for example, when you're stressed, usually you'll rub your head or your shoulders. You don't kind of start rubbing your elbow. You know, if you get a fright, you grab onto your heart. If you experience something that's quite disgusting, you go, oh my God, and you grab your stomach. So we already have these innate areas that we're used to actually protecting. And that's what we're basically doing. We're finding points in the body that just activate the immune system, activate the healing mechanism, activate increased blood supply. The needles, in my opinion, now, you might get 100 acupuncturists screaming down at you after this, but in my opinion, it's not the needles. It's the trauma that's been created. Like, sometimes I joke with patients here, I could use thumbtacks. Now, we don't use thumbtacks, but I could use thumbtacks to create that trauma. And then immediately what happens is that it has an activation within the system.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes a lot more sense to me now. So thank you. I suppose the next question is, you know, what the connection between mindfulness and acupuncture is, because obviously you've launched Mindful IVF, the app. So it'd be great to hear how those work together.
So I got very lucky. Well, maybe not so lucky, but lucky and lucky at the same time. My mum took me to martial arts when I was 7. I was being slightly bullied at the time. So the first thing she did was take me straight to martial arts to learn how to kick back. And I trained for about 7 or 8 years. And so at the age of 7, we were actually doing meditation after each class. And we do maybe 15 to 20 minutes. Now, at the time, I didn't really understand what it was about. For me, it was just closing my eyes and yawning. But over time, I started to realize how I was just much calmer in myself. I was more calmer in my body. I then got my first black belt when I was 11. I got my second when I was 13. And really, the meditation really had a huge influence in just my ability to control my thoughts, my ability to keep myself calm in very difficult situations. Teenage years kicked in and, you know, you go to college and you meet girls and you drink Guinness and you kind of forget about the meditation, you forget about the martial arts. So when I had the clinic open, we were doing the acupuncture and we were really helping the body. What I noticed was that people were still stressed coming into me. When somebody comes into you after 5 miscarriages in a row in 18 months, you know, the joy of being pregnant is no longer there. The joy of getting pregnant is no longer there. And there's this massive fear. So when they find out they're pregnant for that moment in time, they're like really excited. But then within 15 to 20 minutes, like, oh my God, this massive fear consumes them that they're going to miscarry again because there's now a history. And it's very similar that there's emotions attached to different types of things. So, you know, so for example, again, with the 2-week wait after IVF, you know, there's this kind of relief for about 2 to 3 days. And then immediately the brain will go to one of two places. It will go to, I'm so excited, I have an embryo on board, or I'm so excited, I have 2 embryos on board. This is amazing. We're living in the potential. Oh, this is going to work. Or there's the other side where fear kicks in. What if it doesn't work? Can we afford to do another IVF? You know, why will this work for me? I'm not sleeping properly. I'm not eating properly. And almost like the mind goes into a space of, I need to protect myself right now. And the two spaces are very, very different. It's the same transfer. It's the same result at the end, whether it's positive or negative, but the experience is very, very different. What's interesting for me is how the mind works. And again, I'm not a counselor, I'm not a psychologist, but I like to look at the mind like a business. The front part of your brain is, you know, it's like the marketing department. It's the cerebral cortex. It's the future. It's hope. It's belief. It's all about marketing and selling, of having a baby and it's going to work and we're going to be parents. The left-hand side of the brain is the logical side, the accountant. The right-hand side of the brain is the design department. And then in the very back, we've got a guy called George, and he's in charge of health and safety, and he freaks out over everything. Now, he was really important 200 years ago. Because, you know, we were dealing with Vikings, with swords and shields and tigers. And in the last maybe 20, 30, 40 years, he doesn't have a role anymore in life. There's not too many tigers or Vikings around and he's bored. So suddenly he starts to freak out over everything. He starts to freak out about getting pregnant. He starts to freak out about the medication. And then the marketing department comes in and said, yay, it'll be amazing. And then George starts to jump in. Then there's the accountant kicks in, say, oh, logically, how many IVFs can we do? And you have these multiple conversations going on about the same situation. So a lot for me with my patients is telling George to shut up, getting control of George so that he doesn't freak out over everything. And the amount of Georges that come into me on a daily basis is unbelievable.
Wow. And so how do you stop that little voice or George in your head? How do you quieten him?
It's normalizing the situation. So if there is fear, if there is anxiety, if, like, for me, for example, when people come into me and they're stressing about stressing, you're actually doubling the stress. And I tell my patients, just be stressed. And immediately they've cut the stress by 50%.
That ties into the old relax gate thing of people telling you to relax and then it just having the opposite effect.
I don't like that. I don't like that term. For me, relaxing is a lack of understanding of what the person is going through. I think one of the most important things that, like, I, and again, this is just an example where I deal a lot with couples. Men, a lot of the time, can be wonderfully optimistic, right? Not all of them, but a lot of them can be quite optimistic and it'll be fine, it'll be grand, we'll sort this out. And then you're sitting there going, no, it won't be fine. This is probably the wrong example, but if your partner's really interested in sports, if he has Sky Sports, if he loves watching football, turn Sky Sports off for a month, ban him from watching football for a month, and tell him until you're pregnant, you're not watching sports again. And watch that man fall apart within about 2 weeks. And it's, I'm not trying to compare football to trying to get pregnant, but what I'm trying to do is that sometimes men see this very, very differently. And it's only when they get to feel that emotion, because a lot of the time we work on the logical side for us. A lot of time we do. And we don't really understand what our partners are going through.
You talked about the 2-week wait and the kind of thought process and the kind of program, I suppose, that you've created for that. What are the other stages of the IVF process that you've identified and created stages for?
So meditation for me isn't going into a Buddha center and humming for 2 hours. That's not what meditation is. That's not what mindfulness is. And very few of us have 2 hours a day to go, you know, drive to a center, sit down for an hour, relax for an hour, which we won't do because you have 1,000 things to get done, and then hop back into the car and go home. And I think for me, a big part of what we were trying to achieve was to give our patients, and initially it was for our patients internally here, was the tools that for 10 minutes a day, they can go upstairs, they can plug their phone in, and they can just listen. the initial stages was we created a thing called Prep 10. And Prep 10 is basically about getting you into that kind of space of understanding your mind, understanding your body, understanding that they actually work together, and starting to listen to your body and starting to listen to your mind. We then set up IVF Start, which basically has mindfulness programs, meditation, hypnosis for the stages of when you're on the pill, when you're in downregulation, when you're in stimulation, when you go for collection and transfer. And then we have the 2-week wait. And all it is just literally 15 years of me sitting with patients here when they go for their pre and post, when they're on their 2-week wait, when they're being stimmed, and just seeing what they're going through and taking that and trying to put them into a space where they feel calmer.
And so is it about, I mean, there's a lot of talk of the kind of, I suppose, loss of control when you're in the IVF process. And is the kind of mindfulness to a degree about trying to recapture some of that control?
I think for me, mindfulness is just a tool in the toolbox. It's like a hammer, it's like a saw, it's like a screwdriver. It will suit certain people and it won't suit others. And for me, mindfulness is about taking time for you, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's having a glass of wine with friends on a Friday night. You know, it's just being in the moment. It's taking time for you, 10 minutes a day, where you just breathe, where you stop, where you kind of see how you're feeling. The app is just a tool to help you to get there. It's just to help you to understand that you're not alone. Like, we have 30,000 users in the last 18 months. We have 5,000 people a month using the app. And all these women are together. All these women are going through the exact same thing. Infertility, it's never going to be easy. You're never going to feel in control. And I promise you, as soon as you're pregnant, the worry gets a lot worse. Like, when my patients come in for the first time, they say, as soon as I'm pregnant, I'll be fine. As soon as they find out they're pregnant, they're freaking out because now they have something to lose. You know, the worry is just constantly there. And then when they come into me, like, I had three ladies in today and they were being induced naturally, and they were freaking out because they were like, they wanted to make sure the baby was okay, that the birthing process would be okay. The worry is going to be constant, but it's being okay with who you are. Most problems I see are flat tires. They're not broken engines. Most problems I see can be fixed. There's amazing doctors. There's amazing medical teams. There's amazing nutritionists out there. And there are a couple of amazing acupuncturists as well. And one or two amazing meditation people. It's literally about finding something that you enjoy. If you don't like needles, do not go to an acupuncturist. If you don't like people touching your feet, don't go to reflexology. It's about finding stuff that you are good with. It's very easy. Like, I have people coming to my door saying, oh, I don't believe in acupuncture. I don't like needles, but I've heard you're good at what you do. And I'm like, please don't come in here. Let's find something that you would really enjoy.
Yeah, so I suppose if someone, you know, if someone's listening to this and they feel a little bit out of control and like they need a bit of help, is it a case of just considering what the options are and trying everything out?
I think it's finding an expert who's really good at what they do, somebody that has compassion, somebody that has got time for you, somebody that understands what you're going through, and somebody that's willing to run with you to get you to where you need to go. Nobody comes into me because they want to come into me. Nobody comes in here happy, but a lot of people do leave happy. And the thing is that, like, a lot of what we do is there's a lot of crazy people in my space that do crazy things. Stay away from them. Go to people that are recommended. Go to people that can explain to you what they're trying to do. Go to people that can have a diagnosis and say, this is what I think the issue is. For example, two very, very common issues that I see are, one, fertilization issues, and two, implantation difficulties. And one of the more simple things that I see is where the body and the cervix is supposed to be acidic 90% of the time. And then when you ovulate, it becomes alkaline. And that's through the cervical secretions and the mucus. There's proteins there to nourish the sperm, and there's an alkalizing component. Now, that's really, really important for sperm to get to egg. If the body is too acidic, it's really not conducive to healthy sperm. It destroys a lot of the sperm. And what you find is that for somebody who's lacking in secretions and discharge and mucus around their ovulation time, there are things you can do. There's a couple of products that help that. Acupuncture helps that. And even when you take the medical route, an IUI is really good because it bypasses the cervix. The first thing I ask all my patients when they come into me is, tell me about your period. Like, 99% of the time people say it's normal. And I kind of go, okay, what's normal? Tell me about it. And they say, I have a 2-day bleed. There's some brown spotting at the start. I have a lot of clots and I suffer from a lot of PMS. Now, in my book, that's not normal. You need more than a 2-day bleed. You know, there shouldn't be any spotting. And it should be between 3 and 5. There should be a good flow. It should be nice and red. But I've had women coming in with 7 days of black blood thinking it's normal. And it's not. But to me, that would massively influence the ability for implantation to occur. And especially when someone's doing an IVF cycle, clinics are amazing and brilliant, but they are, as I described before, courier companies. They collect, they fertilize, and they transfer. That embryo has to go into a really good environment. And a lot of failures for implantation with IVF are due to the uterus. Nothing to do with the egg, nothing to do with the sperm, failure for implantation to occur. So a lot of the work I do is about ensuring that we get an amazing environment for that embryo to get into.
And if someone is kind of listening to this and thinking, well, I think it doesn't really matter how I feel or if I'm stressed, or, you know, it's biology and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Is there a point of saying, well, you can either have a bad time through this mentally, or you can try and have a more positive take, and it might not affect the outcome, but actually at least you've had a more positive time.
So let's say we have a couple, and let's say the one of the partners is an optimist, and he's an incurable optimist where everything will be okay. And let's say the partner is a realist. What you'll find that sometimes is that some people believe that things are really, really going well and something bad's about to happen around the corner. And then when something bad happens, the incurable optimist believe it's going to get better. Who's right and wrong there? They're both right. Like, the optimist believes everything's going to be fine and the realist believes it's not going to get better. And a lot of the time, you have to take on board who you are. If you believe that the emotional side isn't an issue, then it's not an issue. But if you believe that the emotional issues are having an impact on you, having an impact on work, having an impact on your relationship, then asking for help isn't a weakness. Asking for help is a strength. There are people that come into me and they're really hard to work with because they look at me like I am some crazed lunatic. And they're like, this guy is, talking about energy and talking about acupuncture and talking about meditation. And to me, they are the most amazing cases that I work with. And they're the people that I learn from. And they are the ones that we really, once we break that initial wall down, we get some amazing work done. You know, being stressed is not going to stop you getting pregnant. I can guarantee you that. But it's definitely not helping you. Having fear and anxiety and being emotional is not going to stop you getting pregnant, but it's not helping. So for me, stress is cortisol, it's adrenaline, it's constantly on the go, it's never giving yourself time to take care of you. Calmness of body and calmness of mind is where you take time out for you. And you don't need to become a Zen balanced monk. I'm not asking people to do that, but I'm just asking you to take a little bit of time for you and go to the mind gym, because most of us have no problem going to the gym when we want to. But nobody actually is willing to go to the mind gym and say, you know what? I'm having a really bad week. I'm having a really bad month. And everybody has a bad day. I have no problems with bad days. I have bad days myself, but I won't allow it to become a bad week. I won't allow it to become a bad month. I will figure it out. I will sit down and I will say, you know what? I need to sort this out.
We often talk about women being told to just relax and that's the key. What is your kind of answer to that?
I would unfriend them on Facebook and I would unfriend them on Instagram. No, but seriously, they don't know what you're going through. Everyone's worst day is their worst day. If people are telling you, if you relax, you'll get pregnant. I've never seen that happen. If there's a fundamental issue going on there, it's a physical issue. For me, I'll give you an example where last week a patient came in and she was really upset and she was like, I was at a wedding at the weekend and my aunt came up to me and she was like saying, any news, when are you going to pop some babies out? You're getting older. And she got really upset and she went to her partner and she was crying and they went upstairs. She's like, oh my God, this is getting so tough. And she came into me on the Monday and she was telling me about this and she was going to another weekend in 2 weeks' time. And she's like, I don't want to go because I don't want this coming up. And this aunt is going to come up again. I said, you know what? No, right? When she comes up to you, this is what I want you to say to her. If she says any news, I want you to say to her that you're ovulating right now and you're heading upstairs and you're going to have some nookie. She will never ask you again. She will be horrified. And at least you have an answer and you can laugh about it and go, and you can go back to your partner and say, guess what? She asked me again and I told her I was ovulating right now and we're about to go up and do it. And it's amazing how it changes the dynamics of how you feel about the exact same conversation.
Yeah, well, you go from feeling a little bit victimized to feeling like you're in control.
Empowered,
exactly.
She will never ask you again. I promise you, she will never ask you again. Or if that's a bit too much, just say, listen, we're trying at the moment and hopefully this time next year we'll have a baby. The conversations will stop. And this is a lot about language. This is about understanding that, at the end of the day, nobody knows what you're going through except you.
That's some fantastic advice and I think a good place to stop the interview. So thank you so much again for speaking to us.
So now it's time for Old Wives Tales.
Fact or fiction?
Yay!
Yeah.
Cool.
And so this week I've been talking to Professor Tim Child, who is Medical Director at Oxford Fertility, about...
At
Oxford Fertility. And we've been chatting about when to test once you've had an embryo transfer, because obviously once you've had that transfer, it's up to you to do the first testing to work out whether it's worked.
In a lot of cases, yes. Not always.
No.
Sometimes the clinic will do a blood test for you.
Right.
Those are the good people.
I think that's what happens in the States, because that's what I've been hearing in the other podcast that I listen to that I won't mention again, because you're angry.
I think I have pregnancy test PTSD.
Oh my God, really?
I get very physical reaction to even the idea to have it, of having to do one.
Really?
Yeah. I just get so stressed.
Oh, you know what? I think... I avoid it as well. Like, I will leave it to the very last minute before doing a test. I will definitely wait till I'm late. I'll never test early. I just don't really want the disappointing moment, you know?
I see these people on Instagram who are testing 5 days post-transfer, 6 days post-transfer, then getting really upset when they get a negative.
Mm.
And I feel concerned and sad for them.
Yeah, it's a complete head fuck, isn't it?
It's a real head fuck. Like, when I had my one and only transfer almost a year ago, fuck my life, I waited until day 10 after my 5 day transfer.
Okay.
You're supposed to test on day 11.
Right, okay. So you were a day early.
I was a day early. The timing was good because it was a Sunday or a Saturday. It was a weekend day. Mm. So I could just spend a couple of hours, I spent a long time just grieving.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd had to go to work, that would have been awful.
Definitely don't want to be doing that and then going to work.
No.
I mean, it was bad enough that you went to work anyway, as previously discussed.
Absolutely. but I see these people testing. I mean, I loved kind of pretending to be pregnant.
Yeah, same. I just want to live the dream for as long as I can.
Yeah, it was so nice. So for me, the idea of testing early, like... seemed really weird.
Yeah.
But I see it, like, please don't test too early, guys. Please. It makes me feel sad for you.
Yeah.
I get stressed. Like, just looking at these pictures of people being like, oh, well, I had my embryo transfer 12 hours ago and now I've done a test and it was negative and I'm devastated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a way to do it, isn't there? There's a good way and a bad way, I suppose. We'll hear more about that from Prof Tim.
After an embryo transfer, once the embryo implants, which embryos normally implant around sort of 7th, 8th day of their age, so it depends on when the embryo transfer happens. So for instance, for a blastocyst transfer, that would often be day 5 or day 6 of development. So a few more days later, the embryo would be implanting. There are very, very low levels of HCG, which is a pregnancy hormone, that start to come from the implanting embryo. But it's such low levels that it's not picked up in a urine pregnancy test. And the other thing we have to remember is that the late night trigger that most people will have 36 hours or so before an IVF egg collection, the hormone is actually HCG, which is the pregnancy hormone. So if people test too early, they're potentially picking up the remnants of the late night injection drug. Most clinics probably will be suggesting a test around about 16 days after the egg collection. So if we're then doing a blastocyst transfer, say day 5, that means the pregnancy test is done around about 11 days or so after the blastocyst transfer. People might be able to test a couple of days earlier, but if you're picking up very, very low hormone levels, it doesn't really tell you what's going to be happening, whether the embryo is going to have implanted properly or whether you're picking up remnants of the late night trigger. I think a day or so early would be fine. I think anything before that, if it's negative, it doesn't mean anything because it's just too early to pick things up. And if it's positive, again, it could be a leftover from the late night injection, or it might be just a very low level of amount that's come out from the embryo, but it's not actually showing implantation. So it's best to try and hold off if at all possible.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for the clarity there, Professor Tim. We'll speak to you soon.
Okay, guys, that's it for this week.
Yeah, another episode down. Thank you for all listening and joining us on our journey.
Thank you to Gordon and to Professor Tim and to Anya.
Just many thanks.
So many thanks.
Thanks to my tan. That's the last of it.
I hate it. And have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye. And Twitter?
At Big Neck Pat. At Big...
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.